Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today. Tell them you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. This podcast episode is also sponsored by Side Door, the design industry's newest and most innovative digital sales tool, created to empower interior design professionals to elevate your creativity and your profit. Side Door has partnered with our favorite trade brands that we all know and trust to develop a sales platform that will take your e-commerce approach to the next level. Now you can promote and sell all of your favorite trade brands direct to consumer through your website, blog, or social media, and experience the profit margin you deserve. Side Door is also a powerful purchasing tool for your business, providing access to over 100 trade brands to registered designers for simplified purchasing with no minimums or opening order requirements. Visit onsidedoor.com to learn more and to apply for exclusive trade-only access. Today, we welcome Mike Reeves of Corbin Reeves Construction. The Southern California-based home builder specializes in high-end custom home construction. In this episode, Mike shares their client approach from a builder perspective, how they establish a construction budget, and how design professionals can best contribute to the process. We also discuss how partnering with a quality home builder can lower your stress level, reduce your liability, and make time for design. Let's get started. All right, Mike, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you.
Rick, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming.
It's been a few years.
You've been on my list.
Great. Good to be on somebody's list.
Yeah, and it's a good list to be on. Okay. So you're only our second builder to be on the podcast. So it's been too long in between, and I'm glad that you're joining us. I have some questions for you that I think will really benefit the design community. But before we get into it, let's talk about you a little bit. Introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us a little bit about Mike Reeves.
Okay. Well, I'm a general contractor, as you know. And let's see, this is my 32nd year, believe it or not, doing it. It's been a long time. I graduated from Cal Poly Pomona with a degree in finance, real estate, and law, and with the ultimate goal to be a developer. But late 80s, development was not a good time for development, and for sure not for a kid out of college. So at that point, I started doing remodels and construction, and I've always loved the whole field of developing, remodeling, constructing. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I wanted to be an architect. I wanted to be a carpenter. So it kind of encompasses all of that. I would design. I had pigeons at the time. I would design pigeon coops and then physically build them. And
wow.
This is when I was, 10 or 12. But anyway, so that I guess was my calling, is to be a builder of something.
Yeah.
So started doing remodels, physically doing them, right, which was a great thing.
Right.
Taught me how to do it.
You were wielding the hammer.
I was demoing. I was framing. I was drywalling. Taught me two things. It taught me the trades and how to do it. Right. Also taught me, man, I can't do this forever.
Right.
So just progressed through remodels, getting bigger and bigger than new houses, and started up in the San Gabriel Valley, Pasadena area. And really where it took off was when we kind of hit the entertainment industry. We started doing some work over in the west side of L.A. You're dealing with the celebrity clientele, and then you kind of get passed around through their agents or their friends, and you do a lot of work up there. And then in probably, this is probably in the late 90s, early 2000s, we had a client in Orange County, L.A. client that wanted a job done in Orange County, Beach House. Mm-hmm. And so wasn't our market, but for our clients, we'll go wherever we need to go.
Sure.
And so we said, yeah, we'll go down there and do it. While we're down here, we're building a house, and then somebody sees your sign and calls you, and next thing you know, all of a sudden we have a ton of work in Orange County.
Huh.
And so I was driving from Pasadena for probably 5 or 6 years, and then somebody knocked on our door. I had just been married, and we had a house overlooking the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, not looking to move. Somebody knocked on the door and solicited, said, "Want to buy your house? How much do you want?" And we struck a deal, and I told my newly married wife, let's move to Orange County.
Wow, that really happened. Someone walked up to your door and made you an offer you couldn't refuse.
It did. So in 2003, we packed up and moved to Orange County, and we've been here full time ever since.
That's how it happened. Because, I mean, I've always known you as like an Orange County-based builder, although I know that you do work in L.A. and surrounding areas as well.
Yeah, and we really cut back on our L.A. work. We'll go up there for specific projects. Mm-hmm. Great client, great architect, the right budget. But right now it's just so busy down here and doesn't make sense to drive to L.A. You know, the quality of life takes precedent because the drive, as you know, is just horrible.
Right. So. And for people that don't live in Southern California, like even though it's only, well, it should only be a 45-minute drive, but it's usually 2.5 hours. And that small distance, it really is kind of a different world. And so, you know, to have all of your trades and resources here in Orange County and then to get them to go to L.A. or find new ones in Los Angeles to support those projects is probably, it's a dance, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a different group of subs. You know, fortunately, I do have the benefit of having done a first half of my career in L.A., mm-hmm. Still having a lot of contacts.
I guess so.
Although, look, after 30-something years, a lot of them are retiring.
Yeah.
You know, we're the kind of the old guys.
They're not swinging that hammer anymore.
No. And you're finding more and more guys that, you know, have decided to retire. So I probably don't know as many working subs up there now as I used to.
Right, right. So, Mike, you would consider yourself a luxury home builder. That's what I would consider you. Are we on the same page there?
Yeah, we would say luxury or just high-end.
High-end.
Yeah.
Right.
Like custom homes.
Right. And in full disclosure, we've worked on projects together in the past. And so I have experience working with you and your team, which is why I was so excited to have you on the podcast, because it was always an amazing experience. But I learned a lot in that process. I really learned firsthand what it was like to work with builders like you. And I think that a lot of designers out there are constantly asking themselves questions about, you know, taking their design business to the next level and kind of striving for bigger, more high-end jobs. So with that comes new relationships. You're kind of transitioning from, you know, your little arsenal of plumbers and electricians and GCs to working with the full-on builder who has that kind of all under, not necessarily under one roof, but at their disposal. Right. And that's kind of what I want to talk about.
Okay.
So I want to kind of cover like three key questions with you. I don't want to miss these questions because I think they're important, but we'll probably stray. But I want to start by really kind of understanding what it is that you do and how you structure your business and your relationship with your client. And the reason why I want to focus on that is I want to kind of compare how that relates to how designers, you know, develop their relationships with the clients and how they work. So I want to start with like the bidding process. So if I was a consumer and I wanted to have a home built, I would come to you, say, "Hey, Mike, I'm looking for a builder. I've got an architect dialed in. And, you know, what's my first step?"
So first step, obviously, it sounds like you would have already done it, is to hire an architect. Very rarely are we the first point of contact.
Mm-hmm.
People usually come to us after they have an architect, sometimes even after they have a designer.
Good point.
sometimes even after they have a permit, which in my opinion is a little bit too late, but that happens as well.
Sure.
In terms of bidding, you know, for us, I always tell the clients that, you know, I can give you a pretty accurate bid, but my bid's going to be as accurate as your plans are. Mm-hmm. So the more information that you have on the plans, whether it's finishes, structural, the more information you give me, the better the bid's going to be.
Right.
Because we will physically go out and solicit bids. We don't typically go off of square footage or in-house bids like that. Now, in the instance where there's not enough information and we have to do that, we will use historical data on what we think it'll cost. Mm-hmm. But we like everybody to look at the plans. Look, for us, the one maybe good and bad is we never get to build the same house twice.
Right.
So I never have the advantage of saying, okay, I know how to, you know, I know where all the dead bodies are in this building because I built it before, where the problems are. But on the other hand, everyone for us is a prototype. So everyone is new and different and exciting. So that's, I guess, it's a plus and a minus.
Yeah, for sure. But there's no secret formula. Just like for interior designers, there's no secret formula. Yes, you know, we have like a cost per square foot to get us to a design fee, you know, if pressed. But there's always needs to be a little bit of room because things change as the job progresses and as the design develops, probably.
Yeah, and I can throw a dart at it, mm-hmm. and I can usually get them in the range of what it's going to be. And you know, back in the day, you know, the range was between 300 and 400 a foot. And as builders, we also include the garage in the square footage. Mm-hmm. But those days are long gone, and nowadays, you know, your new average is probably in the $700 to $800 a foot. Mm-hmm. And you know, we've seen things north of 1,000. Probably the most expensive thing we've ever done is north of 3,000 a foot.
Right. Was that in Orange County or LA?
That was LA.
Yeah. Yeah. What a difference.
Yeah. They tend to spend a little more money in LA.
Yeah. So for everyone listening, we're talking Southern California, Orange County, LA numbers here.
That's right.
Yeah. We've got listeners all over the place, Mike.
Great. Well, you're in for quite a shock with numbers for Orange County, LA, and Southern California in general.
Yeah, they're probably rewinding like, what? Is that right?
Right. And no, that doesn't include the land.
Right, exactly.
Or the furniture.
Or the furniture. Thank you for clarifying. So when you're putting that bid together, you're basically, you know, you're meeting with the client, kind of like we do as designers, and you're establishing a budget, for lack of a better word. And just like for us, the more transparent they are with their intentions and their budget, the more successful everything's going to be, obviously.
Correct. Correct. And look, I've never put a budget together and had a client come and say, you know, that is just so cheap. What else can we add for this?
Never.
So I inevitably end up bidding projects two or three times because typically, look, the first time it's usually a sticker shock. Everybody always tries to think they can do it for less, mm-hmm. and you can, but you have to work at it. So we do our first go around, and then after they get through hyperventilating. Okay, well, where do you want to be? You know, in that first round, clients are very reluctant to show their hand. You know, really, they should show it early. They should show it to the architect and say, here's my budget. This is what I want to spend. Mm-hmm. And then the architect should be able to say, okay, then this is what you get. Right. You're going to have a house that's this many square feet. But normally, they don't. Usually, a client says, I want this, and they tell them everything that they want. And the architect thinks, great, let's do that.
Yeah, give them what they want.
Give them what they want. And then same with the designer, right? Yeah. And they pick all the cool stuff. And then when they price it out, they get sticker shock. So, and that's what we call budgeting to the design, meaning design what you want, and we'll tell you what it's going to cost.
Right.
In a world where you have no budget, that's ideal.
Sure.
But the reality is most clients are better off doing a design to the budget rather than budget to the design. So what we found is, and it holds true no matter what style, what size, about half, 50% of the budget is for the structure, the sticks, the bricks, the box, okay. whatever you want to call it, that builds your shell.
Yep.
The other 50% is design finishes, right? What kind of cabinets, what kind of tile and stone, you know, all the stuff that makes it look cool. So what we'll do is if you have a pot, $5 million, they say, look, I only want to spend $5 million on construction. Great. Mm-hmm. So we know 2.5 is going to go for the shell, the core, sticks in the bricks.
Right.
Then that's going to give us $2.5 million to finish it. We'll start paring that out. So we're going to spend this much in cabinets, this much in tile and stone, this much in flooring. Mm-hmm. And then we'll even go further than that and say, in flooring, for instance, you know, we're going to allow, to stay in your budget, we're going to allow $12 a foot for flooring, mm-hmm. Which will then relay to the interior designer or the architect, whoever's selecting the flooring. When you're shopping for flooring, shop in the $12 aisle. Right. Don't shop in the $25 aisle because you're not going to be in budget.
Yeah.
And that's the way that you can stay in budget.
Right, right. So I think this is probably when the interior designer becomes a key participant in the process. And, you know, I learned that, you know, it's important to bring the designers on as early as possible in the process, like you already talked about, because it sounds to me like they can really contribute to driving and staying on budget or modifying the budget realistically. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. In our perfect world, we have a designer on board, obviously, and the architect. But for us, it's really a team sport. Mm-hmm. And I would rather put my budgets together and collaborate with the architect and designer, have them either give me what they're anticipating. You know, maybe they don't know what the flooring is.
Right.
But maybe they know it's not going to be $8 a foot or it's not going to be $20 a foot. But they say, you know what, if you give me $15 a foot, mm-hmm. I can get what I need.
Right.
So I'd rather have buy-in from them before it even goes to the client.
Yes.
So we know that everybody's covered, everybody's happy with the budget that we've allowed, mm-hmm. that they've dictated to produce what everyone will be happy with.
Yeah, it's going to look like they're envisioning and, you know, the designer is going to be able to produce what they do best.
Correct, correct.
So what are the type of deliverables what are your expectations from the designer? What is the best case scenario when the client comes on board and says, okay, architect's already done the drawings, we're happy with that, we've selected a designer. In order for you to do the very best that you can do from a bidding perspective, what do you need from a designer to help you with that process?
Well, at minimum, a spec list, mm-hmm. right, listing finishes or allowances, right? In a perfect world, we'd have a full set of interior drawings from the interior designer,
right?
Which we, every so often, we do get, but we also need to make sure that they've been coordinated with the architectural drawings.
Right.
Because sometimes we'll get two interior drawings for the same house, one from the interior designer, one from the architect, and it looks like two completely different houses. So
that's a problem.
Yes, they should coordinate. You tell me which one you want, because I can only put one set of finishes in one house.
Yes.
But that would be ideal, full drawings. But look, we don't have the luxury of that all the time. Mm-hmm. Part of it is, honestly, clients don't want to initially pay for all that.
Right.
You know, we would rather have it, but sometimes they don't either have the time or even the money that they want to spend to do that.
Right, because that would require a consumer to invest in a full set of design from their interior designer before the bidding process even starts.
That's right.
That's a big commitment.
That's a big commitment. It takes a little more time.
Yeah.
And it obviously takes dollars, right? Mm-hmm. The time that's being put into the drawings.
Right, right. So, you know, if you're not in a situation where you have all of that incredible detail up front, at the very least, if designers, you know, deliver a realistic spec schedule, realistic finishes, even allowances, again, we don't have to pick exactly what it is, but we need to be in the ballpark. So if you're giving us an allowance of $12 and we know that happens to be a key area or a key feature in the home and we're going to need double that amount, we need to speak up and say something.
Correct. Either come up with the amounts or a lot of times inspiration photos,
true.
You know, are great. You know, cut out pictures and, hey, this is kind of what we're thinking. So, you know, allow enough money to do this kind of a look.
Right.
You know, pictures are great for us.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. We're taking a quick break to pay the bills and to tell you about our podcast sponsor, Griage Textiles, a collection of micro-batch fabrics for the home. This designer-created line of textiles is grounded in modern simplicity and time-honored tradition. Each pattern is hand-drawn and screen-printed on Belgian linen by artisan craftsmen right here in California. The collection is represented by select showrooms and independent representatives across the country. To view the newest collection and to locate your representative, visit griagetextiles.com. That's G-R-E-A-G-E-T-E-X-T-I-L-E-S.com. IGETextiles.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for their designer trade program for perks and benefits exclusive to the design community. Now back to the show. Going back to the service people and the tradespeople and the vendors, all of the people that actually work on the construction of the home, one of the obvious differences between working on more, I don't know how to put it, maybe modest projects, I guess, smaller projects, is, like I said, designers typically have connections with painters, and we have a couple of plumbers in our back pocket, and we know an electrician. But in this case, you guys specialize in maintaining relationships with all of those trades and vendors and bringing them to the table as part of the project. So what are the things that you provide that alleviate the designer from having to get involved in? You know, would it be typically electricians, plumbers, all those
so
things?
So we typically handle everything in a project other than what I would call designer items. Mm-hmm. So for us, we provide everything except for we don't do rugs or carpets. We don't typically do window coverings, although it's a 50-50 on motorized shades.
Oh, right.
Because sometimes that ties in with the electrician and the
AV and all that.
AV and the whole home automation. So sometimes we do that. And then obviously you need the furnishings, wall coverings, wallpaper. Right. We don't do any of that. But we do pretty much everything else. We provide all the plumbing fixtures, all the appliances, cabinet hardware. A lot of times we don't do decorative light fixtures, although we will do the install on them. Mm-hmm. Usually that comes out of the designer's budget as well.
Right, right. Okay, and so with that being said, when it comes to like selecting the items, I guess what my real question is as designers, we work with a cost plus. And so sometimes when we're working on maybe not so big jobs and we're the ones specifying and procuring like tile and whatnot, and even plumbing and appliances sometimes, we have a markup associated with that. You have a markup as well for everything that you handle.
We do. We're cost plus. That's mm-hmm. how we do it. And quite frankly, we feel that that's a better deal actually for the client as well. Mm-hmm. It puts everybody on the same team. You know, we want to build the best house for the client.
Right.
If we're on a fixed number, we don't like that because we're on opposite teams now, right?
Yeah.
The client wants the best house, but we're going to try to build it as inexpensive as we can because we need to save some money, or we're going to look for change orders, and
right.
We just don't want to be that guy. So we think it's a better fit to do a cost plus.
And what's a typical or standard cost plus in the building industry? I know that there's no single one. I'm sure it varies just like it does for interior designers, but what's an average?
So average is probably in the 10 to 11%. Cost plus. It's economies of scale. You know, on projects, we've got one now that's $25 million in construction, and that's, you know, that fee is, I think, probably around 8%.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some stuff that maybe is only a couple $1 million, but it's going to be a 14%.
Okay.
So it'll range.
Right. That's good to hear. And we kind of price the same way.
Yeah. The more money you spend, the better deal you get.
That's right. That's for sure. So it's interesting. I think maybe a lot of design professionals are not super familiar with that process, with that markup. And so I think it's important to talk about that, because one of the things that I kind of want to uncover or demystify for designers is really kind of understanding what's happening in the relationship between the homeowner and the builder and how it relates to us. And so oftentimes as designers, our cost plus is usually around 20 to 35%. And so I think it's important for designers to know we're not necessarily competing with a 10 to 12% market from a builder, because it's a different ball game, but it's a concept that's familiar.
Correct.
To the consumer.
Correct.
Right.
The percentages are a little different. But typically the furnishing budget mm-hmm. is less the construction budget.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately for you designers out there, but so naturally the markup needs to be a little bit higher on that, you know, just because you're for us, we have a bigger contract, so we can give them a lower percentage.
Right. I mean, I think one of my favorite things about working with you guys is, you know, we tried our best to make your life as easy as possible, and you definitely reciprocated in so many ways. And one of the most obvious ways to me is kind of taking control of so many of the little nuances, like the fabrication of the stone, the installation of the tile, you know, the details when it comes to electrical and lighting and that sort of thing. I think one of the benefits, you know, to really having a good relationship with your builder is, you know, working in tandem on those things and solving problems together and not having to run yourself ragged trying to find resources for all of those little things we would never be able to design. If I had to run out and find someone, every single trade involved with the construction of that house, I would never be able to design the house.
Yeah, so you're right. And what we are is we're accommodators. And we're accommodators for two people. We're accommodators for the not only the homeowner, mm-hmm. right, in building their house and what they want, but honestly, we're the accommodators for the designers as well. Look, if I make your job easy and I handle that, you're going to love working with us. You're going to refer us. You're right. going to give us good recommendations. So, yeah, we kind of pride ourselves on making people's life easier, I guess.
Well, I mean, I can attest to that because, I mean, there was countless times where we're like, okay, we designed it and they love it. Make it happen.
Yeah. Look, we see that on everything. Like I said, being everything's a prototype. Usually we get, you know, a drawing or a picture and say, we want it to look like that.
Right.
And a lot of times either it doesn't tell us how to do it or how it's drawn isn't really how it's going to be built.
Right.
But we say, okay, well, we'll give you that. We know how to do it. We'll find the guys to do it. And at the end, it'll look like that. But you don't necessarily need to know all the ins and outs of it. We'll just make it happen.
Thank God. Thank God. So have there been times, and I'm sure there have been, when you have interacted with a design professional who maybe is used to purchasing a lot of the things that you guys would typically purchase, and have you had to have that conversation? Like, what is that conversation like when a designer is saying, but I usually buy all the plumbing and appliances and I mark that up, and typically I buy the stone and tile? I would imagine there needs to be a little sit down, usually between you and the designer, you know, and an exchange must occur so that everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, and look, we're real easy to get along with. If certain people want to provide stuff, I've had clients that have special connections for different things. Mm-hmm. If the designer has, look, whoever wants to provide it, we're actually okay with that. But that being said, realize that as long as I don't have to deal with it, mm-hmm. and it just shows up when we need it, then I'm good. But if I have to, you know, spend time in mostly time to facilitate it, to get it there, and then who warranties it?
Right.
You know, plumbing fixtures and appliances, that could be a little bit easier, although, you know, everybody wants to mark it up. Nobody really wants to deal with the problems when it's a problem.
Exactly.
But if you accept that, then we're okay with it. You know, buying tile and stone, that gets a little bit sketchy. I don't even like to buy it myself. Mm-hmm. I would rather put it into the subcontractor's hands because, you know, every once in a while you'll have something where maybe a stone's weird or the tile. We've had issues with tile. The manufacturer, it was off slightly. It wasn't a square tile.
Mm-hmm.
The glaze went bad. You had some problems. And if the tile supplier supplies that, they're responsible for soup to nuts on it.
Right.
And if they didn't supply it and there's a problem with it, not only are they not going to cover it, they're not going to cover any of the labor or anything for it either to replace it.
Right.
So I think it's, you know, I kind of, my adage to that is one throat to choke. If I have a problem with something, I only want to go to one guy.
Right.
And I don't want a finger pointing. Well, it wasn't the install, it was the tile. And then the tile supplier says, no, it was the install. You installed it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he's responsible for everything, it doesn't matter what it is. He's got to take care of it.
Right, right. Which is why it's so important to have one person in control and keep everything centralized so that in the event that you're in that situation, it's not, you know, like you said, a big finger pointing, you know, competition. We have some signature questions that I like to ask
All
of our guests.
And, all right.
Just because you're not a designer doesn't mean that you don't have to answer that.
Okay. All right.
But we ask everyone, and it really, it's the foundation of the podcast. And so in addition to sharing the information that you just shared, which I know is going to be incredibly valuable to designers, tell me what you would consider your secret to survival in the business of design? And when I say that, like, what is your secret to success?
Yeah, clearly ours isn't, so to speak, design, mm-hmm. right? But look, at the end of the day, although we produce a product, right, so we're building a house, but really we're a service business. And so that's what you got to make sure that you provide good service.
Right.
And sometimes that means absorbing some costs or doing what you need to do to keep people happy, even if you feel that you're really not right. You know, it kind of goes back to the old adage, well, the customer's always right.
Right.
So at the end of the day, I think it's fairly simple, is that that you take care of your client, take care of your customer. And for us, like I said, we almost have two clients, right? We have the designer, maybe even three if you throw in the architects. So,
true.
We do a lot of repeat work for designers and architects who want to keep them happy, but we also need to keep the client happy. So yeah. We have three people that we need to keep happy there. So I would say that's a big part of it for the longevity. Like I said, we've been doing it a long time.
Right. Whenever we have architects on the podcast, we always talk about the synergy between designers and builders and architects. And you just kind of made reference to that same synergy. It's important. Everyone has to play nicely together. Good relationships evolve into better relationships and more opportunity. And so, that all boils down to service.
Well, yeah, and like I mentioned earlier, it really is a team sport and playing with everybody. And there's, quite frankly, and you've been in the business, there's certain things that clients don't need to know. not because we're trying to hide anything from them,
sure.
But they just don't need to have the aggravation. They're paying us to take all that away from them mm-hmm. and to figure out the solution and make it good. So we have a lot of sidebars with the design team. We'll bring things up. I've had one instance where there was a room framed, and I didn't say anything to the client, but I brought the architect over and said, "Is this really how it's supposed to look? Because everything's not lined up." He said, "You know what? You're right. It's a mistake." Mm-hmm. But we fixed it.
Right.
Right. No need for the client to know that.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
They just want to know that at the end of the day, it's fixed and looks beautiful.
Get it right.
Exactly. So,
nice.
So we run into that. Again, going back to, we've never built the house. The architects never designed this particular house. And the designer hasn't designed this particular house. So look, there's going to be something that, we may need to modify slightly.
Right. Work in progress.
Exactly. Like an artist.
Right.
Take a few pieces of clay off.
Add a few more here.
Exactly.
For sure. Mike, what would you say is the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then when you entered the industry?
Well, I think the one thing that I've kind of realized, and I realized this a few years ago, maybe more than a few, but early on in the business, you try to run everything correctly and make sure you're paying attention to everything, and you still run into problems, right? And so what I've learned is, again, going back to A, it's a prototypical house or project. So you never built this particular one before. And you got a lot of moving pieces. It's not just your own team, but it's the plumber and his team, and the painters and his team, and then his guys, their car breaks down on the way to work. Now you got to change your game plan for that day.
Right.
So so no matter how well you run your business, you're always going to run into challenges. And it's clearly how you deal with those challenges.
Mike, how would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
Well, so in the past, we've done a few different things, Habitat for Humanity, HomeAide. We've built a few project playhouses over the years. And then we typically will support whatever architects or designers or associations are planning or having. And what's a little bit odd is, this last year, there really haven't been a lot of functions to go to and support, and whether it's a silent auction or anything like that. So it's actually been a little bit slow this year, honestly, for that type of thing.
Yeah, everyone's having to get creative.
Yeah. It's right now it's pretty much, our local police department and some of that. But we don't see really a lot of designer fundraisers. And we had a few, maybe it's probably been more than a year ago, but haven't seen much recently. Hopefully that's coming back.
I think so. I just don't think we could. I'm sure it's on the back burner for a lot of organizations. And so when they can get things rolling again, we can all get involved again. It's such a great community to be a part of, the design build community.
Yeah, and it is good to get together with everybody, so to speak, outside of work.
Yeah.
Right, and just relax a little bit and laugh about the jobs and the mishaps and the past projects and or talk about future stuff coming up. And
So
we're missing that, but hopefully that's coming up on the horizon here shortly.
I love sharing stories. I've always said your very worst day will make for a really great story one day.
Yes, it will.
Well, Mike, I certainly appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much. How can we learn more about you? Where can we find you on the web? And are you guys on Instagram? Because it seems like that's where the design community really congregates.
Yep. So we have our website, CorbinReeves.com. Okay. I put a lot of content on house. We have Instagram, but we're not doing a lot of posting, quite frankly, right now with things being busy. Mm-hmm. We're really just focusing on our clients. We're kind of under the radar a little bit on that.
Yep. Thanks again, Mike. I really appreciate it.
All right, Rick. Good speaking with you.
Great speaking with you.
All right. See you soon.
This conversation with Mike reinforced what many of us may already know if you're currently partnering with high-end builders on your projects. But for many of you, this is all new information. Let me just say that as easy as it was for me to ask Mike questions about how they price and about their customer commitment, it should be just as easy for you to have the same conversations with your construction partners. If you're not asking questions and having conversations with your design build team members about how to best collaborate and provide the very best customer experience, please start today. There is nothing a builder or architect won't share with you in the interest of a successful design build project. I know there are many designers who are crossing over into the high-end market, and I hope that this conversation with Mike answered some of your questions, like how much do builders mark up? And why does the builder facilitate the purchase of stone, appliances, etc.? This is a great example of why you should always be receptive to the evolution of your business model. As you grow, some common practices will require modification in order to establish bigger and better design jobs and partnerships. Relying on your construction partner to do what they do best will allow you to do what you do best, design. I hope this episode has educated and informed you about working with a high-end builder and has inspired you to take your business to the next level with confidence. Remember, we're a community. Designers, builders, architects, craftsmen, showrooms. Together, we rise and succeed beyond our wildest expectations. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.